All right. Hello, Baltic fans. This is Travis back with the Renegade HPG podcast, and we are doing the third in this little trilogy of director's commentaries with DC Bruins, aka Sir Dub Dub. And on the first two episodes, we talked about his Free Hit MechWarrior film, and on the second one, we talked about MechWarrior Origins. For this director's commentary, we're going to be diving into MechWarrior Revival, which was kind of a brainchild for a much larger project that never really gained traction. Daniel will take us a little bit, you know, kind of behind the scenes there, and kind of what was the origin and birth, as well as kind of what was the swan song of this very cool trailer that is online. And we'll take a quick look at the actual video. We'll watch it so you guys don't have to kind of navigate off of this to see it. And then Daniel will take us, basically in a kind of a shot by shot, and talk to us about the process and kind of what went into it and kind of the creative ideas that were going behind it. And it'll be fun. I've had a blast with these videos, and so Daniel, thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here. This is always fun to hop on and sort of geek out about these things.
Definitely. Yeah. And there's not enough great BattleTech animation. And so you've done a great service to the community. So I'm happy to kind of bring more attention to it. So we got MechWarrior Revival. This one is, we talked about in our longer conversation, our longer podcast, which if anybody hasn't caught that, I definitely recommend kind of going back and seeing that, because we'll get a lot more of kind of the expansive view of it. But, maybe give us a little bit of background before we kind of dive in of what was the kind of the impetus for creating this trailer, and what led to actually it getting published, and what the backstory is for it, other than being really cool looking.
Yeah, sure. MechWarrior Revival actually started in the summer of 2013. I was transitioning from my junior to senior year at university, and had some time to work and kick out an art project over that time. One of the things that I wanted to do was capture the sort of like raw visceral terror that a particularly close game in MechWarrior Online sometimes had been at the time.
Yeah.
So basically I took a shadow play or a recording of one of the matches that I ended up in, and reskinned it into a narrative in a comic format about a Free Rasselhog Republic hunchback pilot, basically being the last person in her lance, trying to just desperately defend this sort of pass as a an allegory or some sort of lesson about someone's need to manage terror and manage panic, and being able to not necessarily conquer your fears, but you let your fear drive you forward, and use that in order to find success, or be able to just survive in this sort of hellish future. And then that, I posted up the first couple of pages of that in the old MechWarrior Online forums and the fan art section, and within 30 minutes I got a message from Phil or Sean Lang from the No Guts No Galaxy podcast saying, "This is really cool. Do you want to do you have any time when we can talk about maybe putting these up on the No Guts No Galaxy website, or talk to you about any future or upcoming projects or things like that?" And I said, that sounds really cool. You guys have a big audience. You seem really enthusiastic and awesome guys. So yeah, let's do this. So we got into that, and eventually the rest of that comic was published through the No Guts No Galaxy sort of network of social media channels, their Facebook, their website, things like that. And it got like a whole bunch of positive reception and enthusiastic interest. Later on through the rest of that year, we actually we started up a second comic that basically it kind of had to go on hiatus because that was my senior year of college and everything was, you just had to like finish all of the work to get through to that. Eventually though, they approached myself and I think his name is Ken Talkis or Plexi, the guy that does the All Systems Nominal sort of parody cartoon.
Okay.
Saying, what if we did, because we have a whole bunch, like we have a small team of like animators here. What if we did an in-universe animated show based in the BattleTech universe?
Yeah.
And I immediately said, that sounds amazing. I'm going to boot up my old Flash program and start animating things and start like putting shots together. Can I try to take this like narrative that I've been slowly spinning around in my head with the rest of these comics? Can we translate that into like full live motion? And sort of did that. Basically like creating an example of what this thing would have been like. The eventual idea or the original pitch was to have this trailer serve as a sort of basically the launching point for some sort of crowdfunding campaign, like a Kickstarter campaign at the time, in order to raise X amount of funds to say, okay, you can just sit down and just animate this. And like that can be the thing that you do after graduation for a couple of months, and so you can have like a thing in your portfolio and like a connection to the community and all this sort of things. I think it was Blamely Pardot that you were talking to earlier about Fanworks.
Yeah, Mike Stackpole. We talked about Stackpole specifically. Yeah.
Yeah. Stackpole basically brought up the exact point that we had all run into, which is whoever owns the intellectual property at the time to whatever thing you're making a fan work for, they are your gods. And if they say you cannot do a thing, it is done and you have to move on from that. That ultimately is what happened. We had to, because it sounds like the No Guts, No Galaxy guys, they had talked to Russ Bullock at PGI and maybe even some folks at Catalyst Games or even Microsoft as to figuring out who actually owns the rights to making animated BattleTech content. Eventually, it came down to, we might have to take this all the way up to the full holding company of Topps Games, the sort of like baseball card trading company that bought the BattleTech license after FASA went under. So I had in my sort of like last sort of month, right before graduation, I had sent off an email to, I think it was like their legal team, their legal department, saying, hey, here's our idea. Can we like go ahead and try to like raise funds for this thing? They didn't come back with any sort of like legal action or cease and desist or anything like that. I just got a very politely, very nicely worded email from, I think, the head of their legal team saying, we're looking at our own stuff to do with this. So sorry, we can't let you pursue funding for this thing at this time. At that point, basically the trailer was essentially already done. So I sort of made the choice to come clean about the situation, tell the fans, tell the community, this is sort of what happens. These were the like the legal barriers that stop anything in additional, like any additional content like this from being created. But hey, at least we got some cool Stompy Robot animation out of it. So that was sort of a fun thing to at least put out in the community. And just like watching the thing kind of explode in the first sort of week after putting it live was very gratifying to see. So awesome. I'm really glad that it is still like being referenced or like brought up to this day up to like 6 years later. And like being at the same time, like brought up as an example of something like really cool that you could do with this universe, and people just like vehemently debating the animation style that we like
All
that I
right.
went for. Oh
Yeah.
yeah. Oh man. This is the controversial one.
Oh
This
boy.
is the video that I have gotten.
I was going to ask about it, and we talked about it a little bit in our podcast, but I was definitely going to revisit it after we're done. But okay, well, that'll be top in the priority list.
Oh
So.
yeah. No, this is the one that people will point to and say, this is actually awful, and you should
Oh
not
boy.
continue as an artist.
False.
Yep, like
False.
those are like verbatim, those is the sort of things that I have gotten, which is like that's how you've done something on the internet.
It's funny because that is a no truer statement is that you're not kind of pushing, you're not doing anything that means anything unless people start downvoting you and kind
Yeah.
of putting out comments. I mean, to give a quick background, as an athlete, I've won several national championships. I've coached national champions. I have some world records, on some more obscure distances,
Dude, that's awesome.
for indoor rowing. And I post videos, on my personal channel where I talk like in depth, like lecture style about training methodology and what actually goes on with the body and why you should do this and not do that. And there'll be like some, 60-year-old guy who's been rowing the same way for 40 years who come and be like, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, what? And they'll just got debate, and it's like, and people will just kind of go after you, and it's just so, but that's the internet. Everyone has a voice. Especially as an artist, I love the animation style here. I like that balance between just kind of the like almost the film of real kind of practical effects and the crazy the little bit out there animation of kind of a Macross or Robotech. I love it. There's people that I love it. There's people that don't like Star Wars. So if there's people that don't like Star Wars and people don't like your animation, you're okay.
Yeah,
But
the way that I've come to approach it over, like finally over the years, is someone loved this universe enough to tell you that you did it wrong, and that means something.
that's a great perspective. Very cool. Well, let's just see how awful this video that you made is, and then we can talk about it. So let's go ahead and pull it up for everybody. So we'll go ahead and watch through the video, no chatting, and then we'll kind of circle back to the beginning and start breaking it down.
Sure.
Awesome.
Let's see if I can hit the share screen button. That one, share.
it is. Oh man, that last shot. Wow, the sound effects on the last shot, they get me every time, man. It's so visceral. Awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. It's been a while since I've actually sat down and seen this thing. This is a little fresh. Like heart's pumping a little bit. That's cool. Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah. So where to even start with this?
Beginning.
Yeah. So we.
Oh, is it letting go to the beginning?
Okay. I mean, we can. So so there's that sort of like low, awesome orchestral sound from the original No Gods, No Galaxy soundtrack that was out for a little while ago. Awesome. I'm not sure if it's still available, but we got it. I think this was one of the first sort of test shots that we did of basically making or like redesigning the old Mackie.
Mm-hmm.
And just showing like that being constructed as this like almost like huge or like mythological entity, big old titans. And what I really like about the sort of art style that Alex Iglesias Flying Debris actually brought to MechWarrior Online and that sort of like revitalization of the BattleTech aesthetic is he does this thing where when he's painting one of these models, in that he will basically block out the entire mech in a single like flat color.
Okay.
So like the entire, it's basically just like one flat shape, and then he goes in and he like cuts out with a darker color individual sort of like panels and armor, and he like carves shapes basically in 3D space or within the light of the thing as he's designing one of these mechs, and I wanted to emulate that sort of aesthetic style as much as I could in the admittedly limited technology that this animation program allows.
Mm-hmm.
Adobe Flash is not necessarily known for being able to deliver super high quality, incredibly complicated drawings and details. But we'll get into that when we do like animation breakdowns. Yeah.
Well, as a layman, I don't have a clue either way, but I do know that there was a comment of somebody basically saying, "Oh my God, you did this in Flash!" You know, so much respect.
Yeah.
So I got the sense that it's not an easy program to work with.
It's one of those things where, like, about 60 to 70% of the time, it is actually wonderful to work in. Especially if you're doing something like storyboarding for a project where you just need to like work quickly and iterate fast and just like make something that exists in time and space and like can move around really, really well. Mm-hmm. It does that fantastically. As soon as you try to go in and clean things up or add detail or add effects or anything of that sort, you have a 100% chance that the animation program will crash on you at the worst time.
Mm.
And you will lose all of the work that you had been doing for the last couple of hours. And it'll track down the file and corrupt the file there. It sets your hard drive on fire. It's like, it is legendarily finicky and odd to work with. But at the time of, especially this video, it was the program that I had the most training in, and it's one that is it was like widely available to work with.
And this was what, 2014?
This
what,
is 2014, yes.
Okay.
Then we've got this shot of Blackjack taken down or taking on an Orion. And I think this was sort of establishing, it was one of the establishing shots of how I wanted to have mechs move around in this I guess cinematic universe. I think we'll just replay it at normal speed, especially here in a sort of like snowy environment. I wanted to show that these aren't simply walking tanks, and that they do move with a little bit of life and a little bit of like active power, you know?
Right.
So they have weight and momentum, and it's really fun to imagine one of these machines like using the slipperiness of snow and ice to like augment a turn, sort of like place himself down. And then you see that Orion in a couple of frames there, its foot sort of
slides, yeah.
Yeah. Like slips over. So that was a big sort of thing that I wanted to emphasize with it. If I was going back now, I would say I would reframe both of these mechs as something much smaller than they are here. So like maybe like a flea versus a fire starter or something like that. Once I've nailed down how I wanted every mech in the universe, like by weight scale to move around.
Okay.
But still, this is a fun sort of experiment. Especially there's a property of animation called squash and stretch and anticipation, where you notice I'm just scrolling through. We'll play. There's a couple frames of this Orion like leaning into that turn, and it like holds that, it builds up this tension of the motion, and then snaps it out like that.
Yeah. Okay.
That was a property that I had only recently really started to delve into. So it was sort of fun to get that sort of satisfying tension and release in a shot in an animation.
Awesome.
And then this is just a bunch of layered smoke missiles that fall down on... This is one of the shots that I'm not going to show, folks. This is just a very rough cutout of a blackjack, and each of those individual legs is just like one singular moving piece that's just doing this.
you gotta hide the little stuff.
Yeah, that's why it's moving awesome. Quickly. Davian's in a nutshell.
Yeah, awesome.
Which I just, that was just a test animation that I just ripped and threw it in here because, hey, awesome. that looks cool. That's a fun thing.
Yep.
The Atlas of Doom, which was an incredibly fun thing to put together and animate, because there's a lot of stuff going on in this shot that we can eventually get to. Someone, I'm not sure who, eventually pointed out, this is just like the standard Windows Movie Maker transition effect, and he is absolutely right.
Well, I'm still on the fade to black as my almost exclusive transition in my videos here. So
yeah,
you gotta start somewhere.
You gotta start somewhere. I had next to no experience with video editing programs at this point, didn't have the time to go in and do like custom animated letters like you see at the beginning there. So, Windows Movie Maker transitions. There you go.
There you go. Funny.
I think this is actually the same image of that planet from MechWarrior Origins.
Okay.
It's basically just like a Photoshop painting where you just like take.
Yeah, with all the explosions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Awesome. So that's just like a texture that has been warped into a sphere in Photoshop, and then just add a little bit of like rim lighting around the edge of it. A sort of rotating ominous drop ships. Coming down, a straight up ghost bear clone of Nikolai Malthus from the BattleTech cartoon.
I love it. We can I can kind of throw in a little surprise announcement here, but I actually connected with the Art of BattleTech on Twitter, who's doing a full AI upscale of the animated series, and we're going to kind of post those remastered.
Oh man, I'm stoked.
On Renegade HPG, so stay tuned for that, audience. We'll get that out. They look good. They're sharp. They're way better than anything that's out there. So
oh, fantastic.
Speaking of Nikolai, but yeah, this is an awesome shot. Love it.
And then as always, you have to have the poor bloody infantry.
I love it.
That dude's really trying. It does not really help him.
Now, was this inspired by one of the trailers? I think it Mech Warrior 3 or Mech Warrior 4, because I
Yeah,
was
with this,
just watching that last night where, yep, the
yeah, Mech
summoner
Warrior
stuff
Three.
went
There's like a summoner that's like in the middle of a city, and some poor dude like trips on a shoelace or something, and just gets turned into tomato paste. Yeah,
Lets out the old Wilhelm scream and then eats it. Yeah.
yeah. So like that, if you want to describe the fate of the Free Ras Al Hog Republic in a nutshell, it is that shot.
Aww.
Oh, you wanted the democracy and BattleTech.
No.
This is actually the Hunchback pilot from that original comic book, or like original short comic that had gone out the year earlier.
I'll
Yeah,
have
so
to,
took
I'll
that.
get the link from that for you and put it in the description, because I don't think I've actually seen that.
I will. Yeah, I'll have to track it down too. This is a fun one of those fun little incredibly dramatic space opera shots that wouldn't really exist in a like Band of Brothers style military drama, but with the really bright candy colors of Flash and the sharp lines that all of these machines are designed in. This is like very much evoking something like a Genndy Tartakovsky art style, like a Samurai Jack sort of thing. That sort of like widescreen, super cinematic, super stylized quality. That's sort of, yeah, that was sort of like the Endgoldian vision for what this project was eventually going to be. Had a little FRR flag burning, which I'm actually, those are actually some pretty nice little bits of fire there. Madcap walking around with a couple of elementals.
Props to having a Mad Cat with 20 missile tubes too. It's amazing how much Mad Cat are out there just goes to LRM-15 and just kind of
Dot
pretends
dot
that's
dot
the
dot
Mad
dot
Cat
dot dot
prime.
dot 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 dot
Yeah.
dot 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 dot.
Yep. I love this shot. I love the shot of the locust.
Yeah. That was a really fun one to sit down and do.
Yeah.
I can again in the breakdown we'll explain why, but this is one of those shots that still stuck with me and something that I've wanted to be able to recreate now that I've like upped my skills a little bit in both 2D and 3D animation. So
So cool.
hopefully we'll be able to have that out sometime soon. That's a straight ripoff from one of the comics. Where you have a couple of mercenaries who are like someone's holding one of them at gunpoint hostage in the middle of like a bar scene because they're going to try to steal the mechs, and this little guy's like, wait a second, give me a second, and just throws a whiskey bottle. And then that was one of the ones that you pulled out for the trading card game.
Yep, CCG card. Yep.
Yeah.
Got the rifleman. I got that locust. I've actually pulled the pilots. I've gotten both of the locust and the hunchback pilot on cards too, though I haven't shared that with anyone yet.
Oh, fantastic.
Yep.
Actually, if there's a thing that I specifically wanted to share about this Hunchback pilot. And you also notice it in the her father, the Hunchback pilot in Freehat. Both of them, like the father had like a big old like a plate over his right eye. She just has it's like a big old flop of hair. Partially that was just for like an aesthetic look, but what I really wanted to go for is that, and this would have been explained later on in the sort of development of the plot, but the Hunchback is a mech in which your entire right side of like your field of vision is just, if any of your systems or any of your sensors go bad, you're basically going to be blind on that entire right side. And especially in a sort of kind of ramshackle universe in the ramshackle state that the FRR is in at this time, especially out like towards the periphery, they don't have a guarantee that that's actually going to work. So what do the Hunchback pilots do? They intentionally just have something covering their right side so they can, by instinct, build the spatial awareness that they need in order to like know how this machine is going to work.
Oh, that's awesome. I love
Yeah.
that. That's quality story building right there.
So later on, there's going to be a shot of like the locust pilot like tosses an apple or something to the Hunchback pilot, and she's just like staring into a fire, and she just catches it without looking up. That would have been a good time. And of course, there is internal group drama, because I mentioned earlier, we have a pair of mercenaries working with an FRR pilot who notoriously not really the biggest fan of mercenaries, because they took advantage of some not quite thoroughly written contracts in their sort of war of independence and basically bailed out in moments when they probably could have stuck around and maybe helped out the FRR a little bit. The idea was this guy and this lady have a bit of a connection that has gone back a couple of years back to the point when his unit abandoned her father.
Got it.
In Freehat. And that's how like that whole line is collapsing. So she is not happy to be stuck working with this dude.
So much storytelling potential. Tops, why did you say no?
Yeah. They had their own things to do. It's fine. Yep, I get it. Yep. Here's just straight up. It's the Lion King opener, but you put a Locust in front of it. This is the shot. This is the one that all of the hate mail comes from.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. From the I
know. Oh yeah. Coming. Oh yeah. You have a dude pulling a katana on a daishi. Mm-hmm. Two things. First, people say this guy has no chance in hell trying to take on a direwolf, as I think we discussed earlier. Like one dude versus a direwolf is not really going to make a difference. I think this was an error on my part of trying to convey stories, sort of like either visually or contextually or through writing. But the idea was, what would you sacrifice? And then you immediately show this dude trying to duel a 100-ton clan mech. I tried to make it at least somewhat clear that this guy is not expected to survive in the whatever encounter is going to be happening, either that or has some sort of trick up his sleeve.
I mean, it's like the Tiananmen Square photograph. I mean, it's sometimes you just got to stand in front of the thing. There's no hope of surviving. You know,
it's the kid come throwing on, a rock at a dragon.
Yeah, read a history book. Come on. You know, sometimes it's the symbol that matters.
Yeah, and then there's like the hundreds of comments of like this is just like anime bullshit.
Oh no.
Yeah, that sort of thing. I got it. I like it's if I went back, I'd retool this one to be a little bit more grounded. But eh. At this point, I'm saying maybe just like we could move on and not have to come back to some of these moments. And then this is the second most talked about clip is the Hunchback just punching a mad cat off a cliff. it's so incredibly dumb. Dude. And
just, you must revel in the joy, people. Yeah. Just revel in the joy.
Yeah, like
the visuals.
Giant, stupid robots just punching the hell out of each other. Like this is this is also what BattleTech is.
Yeah. And I studied physics for 3 semesters at least in college. That's how momentum works. You know?
Yeah.
You know, 55 tons is a lot of momentum when you got about 60 kph behind it or 90.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be.
Yeah, I think I might have biased myself a little bit because in my own like personal Hunchback build in MechWarrior Online, I bumped up the engine a little bit, so it's more faster than it is tough. So I was kind of reflecting that here. Whoops, okay. Punch that, takes a maghead off the cliff, and then that shot.
Love it.
Ugh. I'm just going to turn up the sound again so we can just...
Yeah, please. Oh, so good. So good.
And like that's actually was one of the easier shots for Flash to be able to handle, oddly enough. And we can sort of get into why that is when we do a breakdown. But this is the one that people seem to really, really respond to and really love. And this is that sort of like visceral titanic carnage that
you can
absolutely get at with what Battletech can be.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I was literally thinking just Clash of the Titans right there.
100
ton versus 100 ton.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So that's a MechWarrior Revival, the one that sort of started this ridiculous foray into Battletech animation.
Glorious, not ridiculous. Glorious.
It's the same coin. It's just like slightly different lighting.
True. Got it. All right.
All right. So here, I think this is just the first one that we have pulled up is the locust in front of a sunset. Mm-hmm. And I can sort of break down what's going on here. The way that most of the shots in Revival were built were basically by setting out a series of art assets that were layered over each other and then moved through Adobe Flash's tweening system, which basically says this shape is here on frame one, and then you can move it to like here it is on frame 50, and you can like change that transition, and it'll like smooth out the transition between the two.
Okay.
Using that system, which is honestly just like a really simple premise, you can get a whole lot of like really dynamic motion out of it. And then lastly, you basically put in a last sort of symbol that has a bit of scripting attached to it that tells the program, hey, this is actually a camera. Whatever this thing is pointed at, that's sort of where everything shows up. Okay. So we have a full like background and template of how the full shot moves, right? Like that's what the working file looks like.
Okay.
But then I'm just gonna pull that down a little bit so I can hit the commands here. Then when you actually go in and sort of export the video, you get that sort of motion. And even now we're starting to see the things that broke Flash here. There's some blurs and lighting effects that just eat up the system's RAM when you're trying to test it in a real-time environment. So we're only getting like one or two frames here. So you had to export this and like render it out as its own video. So we can actually zoom in. And there's like a lighting layer, an overlay layer to get that sort of like cool dramatic look. There's our background or our foreground motion just like coming through here. If we can click in to this guy, we got a little locust running around. Yeah, this is actually made out of, this is a really good example of the sort of animation style that Flash is known for. Flash works on something called tween-based and symbol-based animation, where you have individual, like it's a cutout shape, right? Mm-hmm. It's basically like that is a specific asset that I can then drag around and like rotate, or like change the proportions of it, right? And what you do is you just say, this is where this bit is on that frame, and then you move it to the next frame, you move it to the next frame, and you have these little icons here called keyframes and transition points between them, ultimately leaving you with a sort of one moving piece that you then add on with a second moving piece. The more moving pieces, the more like dynamic motion you can get at. You have like the little torso running around, that little like bobbing motion, the antenna like jumping around, the second, that sort of like back set of machine guns. And then each of these legs is actually its own sort of embedded animation. And each of these leg portions are their own little piece as well. So this little 5-second clip contains a 2D basically built model comprised of maybe 100, maybe a little less than that, maybe like 60 individual sort of cards and pieces that are then like set into the full animation and moved around like that. We can like even do little breakdowns of like these are the individual parts that move around.
So this is a five second animation, you said?
This is about 5 seconds, yeah.
All right. How long does it take to create this 5 second animation? Rough estimate.
This one was a solid day's worth of work.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit longer to get all of the details on the locust model.
Mm-hmm.
And just go back and forth, building the model, testing it frame by frame, building all the little portions of it. And then going back and putting it into like the full environment.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one, where are you? There was like a particle system within this sun that was really fun to work around with. Are you way up at the top? Ah, yeah, there it is. We had to basically make our sunlight here is just a whole bunch of ovals that are just transitioning upward.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so like that's its own like small little embedded animation within itself.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it's all just like layered over and over. And that's sort of an idea of like a very simple basic version of how one of these shots would have been comprised. This is a flat from the side profile shot of a mech transitioning from left to right, and all of the elements of the scene are also moving left to right. Okay. This is sort of Flash's bread and butter. It works really well transitioning things on the X and Y axis, but anytime you want to move something toward or away from the camera, you have to really work to make the program be able to emulate that sort of 3D effect.
Got it.
Which you can
is that just actually, mainly tied to the perspective change that's happening?
Pretty much, yeah. Also, Flash has this kind of annoying issue where you can sort of warp shapes in one particular direction, mm-hmm. but you can't distort them based on like individual control points. So you can't warp a shape based on its perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. You kind of, your solutions have to be either hand drawn or broken even further up than you would expect them to be, or just made a little bit more wonky than they probably could be. There we have our locust running out and onto our full sort of workstation. This is a good example of a sort of hybrid system that I think I would actually like to return to when I start working on more mech animation in earnest. We have another one of these sort of plate-based or symbol-based animation for that that sort of leap and leap and
slide.
That's it. Yeah, mech drifting. So each of these are their own like individual little pieces broken up onto several layers that are then moved within the sort of working space to create that illusion of motion. They are then, when it transitions to that full run, it turns into a sort of hybrid animation in which you have moving symbols for let's see if we can break that up as well. Yes, we have a moving symbol for that torso there, just bobbing up and down, right? Mm-hmm. there is another smaller bit of animation for like the antenna sort of like bobbing and weaving around. Another one for that pelvis sort of moving a little bit independently of the rest of it. And then each of these legs is actually a hand-drawn basically asset or piece of animation, right? So these are like, this is a full sort of frame that has been just like penciled in, and it just plays as its own like small little animation, right? Mm-hmm. You then clip that small animation to the rest of the mech with all the rest of the stuff that isn't necessarily changing as much in that perspective, which gives you that much more dynamic and lifelike motion. And I think this is close to what I would end up trying to do if I went back to, like, as I go back to 2D mech animations, where you have like some anchored sort of assets, and then they're attached to much more fluid sections.
Got it.
Yeah.
That looks great. This is my favorite animated part of the trailer.
Yeah, there's something incredibly lively about the locust that is just so fun to see in motion.
And we talked in the Origins video about kind of our mutual, you know, appreciation of medium and light mechs, and how much, you know, they should make up the vast majority of kind of combat units in it. But you know, this is just how I see kind of the light mech moving. You know, I mean, the locust survives on its speed.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that dynamism. That's the right word. Dynamism. Yeah. Okay.
Dynamism.
Dynamism.
Yeah. You know, like the locust always struck me as a bit of like a cross between like a really twitchy ostrich or secretary bird and a race car.
Okay.
So I want to see this thing like flying around corners, and its little feet are like skittering around, and like the gyro system and like the automatic like keep the mech upright programming are like struggling to keep them like to like maintain balance as this thing just flies around corners. And
I love that ostrich running metaphor there.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah,
big old running birds. Let's see, which one is this? Oh, here's like an old original breakdown of that hunchback tackle, where you can see basically sketches of what the mech was going to look like. A lot of times what I did for both this animation and for like anything moving forward is you would draw out very, very simple like keyframes of this is where the mech is on this frame, this is where the pose is on this frame, this is where the pose is on the next one. And then when you go in and do the full animation, you sort of clip things into how everything's sort of set out. Also a fun thing is, if you notice, these are much more like, I guess, low resolution versions of the ultimate assets that you see in the rest of the movie. So what we have are just like very simple blocky shapes that are then you can go in and just like detail the heck out of them once you have the animation down, which was one of the sort of time saving methods that I will probably end up employing in the future because when you have giant robots, the biggest hurdle that you come down to is just the sheer amount of detail that these machines have, and trying to get those to work in a sort of a full lifelike motion and vibrancy. That's why, like, when you see old school like 1980s and 1990s like mecha anime, when you have like hand-drawn Gundams like moving through a city and like going to punch each other, and you got like pipes and rivets and screws flying all over the place, and there's dust everywhere, and like you can see like servos whining and straining as these machines like battle with momentum and gravity. Someone went in and drew all of that, and it's magnificent.
Indeed, amen.
Yeah, Cowboy Bebop like has a whole bunch of fantastic examples of that sort of incredibly detailed technical animation. And then
so what were the complaints about that shot with the hunchback going in?
Hunchback, I think, is running too fast and is basically moving in a more dynamic way than it should be able to in this universe.
Okay. Yeah.
What I don't see is that I also get those, I get similar comments on the animation in Freehat too. Okay. Of the mechs are moving too fast and they feel too light and floaty, which I think these people are coming from a basis of they played a lot of MechWarrior 3, which has a very slow and cumbersome sort of animation system. It works really well for the style of that game. And I think after reconsidering and like looking in at the aesthetics of how I want to have these projects and films shape out, they do have a bit of merit and they do have a bit of point. And these mechs, especially in Revival, are moving faster than even I would like to see them now. But I am not like my foot on the ground, this is the hill that I'm going to die on moment, is I'm not going to make walking tanks.
Yeah.
But I'm trying really, they're
not walking tanks. I mean, I also, before I was a rower, I was a track and field athlete and a fairly good one. And I still run for my primary exercise now. But looking at the stride, if you look at how a sprinter runs, 200 meters or so, and right. then extrapolate the speed that they're going for that, and then expand that into a humanoid form, running 60 kph, it looks fine.
Yeah.
they're not going to be clunky. Nothing running that fast with two legs and two arms is going to look clunky. It's going to be there's dynamism to it. That's what the gyro is for in the Neuro helmet. So
if
anything, maybe the stride length is long, but
like the frequency is a little bit too fast. Like it's stepping too quickly, but ultimately that's like, something that we can try to address in the future.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who's spent many hours watching athletes move, there's no uncanny valley there for me. The movement looks good.
Good.
So.
Even in the lore, these machines aren't necessarily constructed in the same way that we have a lot of robots today. Mm-hmm. In that, they're using actuators and servos, like electric motors that are usually operating on like a single rotational axis, and you connect those to the rest of the limbs, right?
Yeah.
Mechs are based on myomer, however you pronounce it, bundles, artificial musculature connected to an artificial skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
I actually took a little bit more inspiration for how I want these machines to look in my head from the show Neon Genesis Evangelion and like the production notes that they had for that. It's a giant robot show with a lot of like crazy anime nonsense and dark themes and like some like really fantastic, spectacular character writing, but we're getting beside the point. The giant robots in that show were very intentionally made not so much to appear as giant robots, but as like barely caged monsters that people happen to be piloting around. And that's sort of the aesthetic that I want to go for these things. Like they're lifelike and they move with more fluidity and more soul than you would expect. While hopefully at the same time being these heavy, clunky, grounded war machines. So that's sort of the balance that I'd like to strike there. Feel alive and they have to have giant cannons.
Well, in the balance between a slow clunky tank and spiders doing somersaults, we have found a good balance there. I mean even in the original, I think was it in the Warrior trilogy? It was either Warrior or Blood of Kerensky, where I think Allard jumps his mech onto the side of a building and reaches in to try to grab somebody.
Yeah,
you know, there's there's a lot of agility and original about BattleTech. Granted, Stackpole, you know, has a dramatic flair to it, but still, you can't say that the original authors didn't envision a dynamic moving machine.
Yeah, and like my exposure to BattleTech up until that point had been MechWarrior 4 and the books. I've never actually played a game of the tabletop, and I've never played any, or I haven't. To any great extent played any of the older MechWarrior games with that older animation style. So this is the thing that, this is what felt right and felt natural to me.
Yeah. It is amazing how vast the kind of how broad the vectors of involvement are for BattleTech, of how many people kind of like, they just haven't even touched some aspects of it, you know, that are like the core for some people. Totally. I've played surprisingly little tabletop in my time. I've read a lot of lore. I've played a lot of MechWarrior 2 and MechWarrior 1. MechWarrior 1 was a great role-playing game. A combination of role-playing and kind of in the cockpit.
Is there a way to even find that anymore?
I mean, you got to have special, like, you know, DOS boot up systems. But and it's just, I'm not one of those that can actually go back and kind of be able to enjoy those 30-year-old games the way, you know, it's just even looking at MechWarrior 2. Like, I mean, I've the memories that I have of MechWarrior 2, and then I watch like gameplay videos. I'm like, oh, wow, I don't think I could immerse myself the same way as I did. But
yeah,
MechWarrior 1 was fun. I remember my go-to, I think it was a locust with, you know, exclusively machine guns, and you would just run up to the legs of battle masters and then just like shoot at their leg until they
just
fell
like
down.
Chew it apart. Yeah,
because you were too fast. You were too fast for them to kind of react and to shoot you back. Yeah, it was the glitch I found in the game. I'm sure I wasn't the only one.
And then this is the breakdown of that actual circling. Death spiral walk as an example of how what we did to torture this program. So like, here is a very simple animation using four symbols making the leg of one mech walk, which is then duplicated for the other leg at basically like the midpoint of that same animation, and then it's just repeated over itself, right? So that becomes, that goes from four individual moving parts and layers to eight individual moving parts and layers. You add an additional two more just for the rest of the mech just moving around here. For the pelvis and the torso. You do the same thing for the direwolf here, so that is two independently constructed symbol-based animation templates or assets, right?
Yep.
You then put that onto an enormous stage that is not only rotating but has multiple sort of like levels of rotation. So there's like one asset is moving a little bit in the background, and then the next asset on top of that is moving a little bit slower to create this thing called a parallax effect, where something closer to the camera moves faster than something away from the camera. And you just, you put that in the front, you draw in a whole bunch of custom hand-drawn explosions and weapons fire attack effects all over that. Some hand animated, or not hand animated, but like you import some smoke. Oh, so the smoke that is in this animation is a series of flat smoke asset stamps that were just like made in Photoshop, imported into Flash, and then made to rotate slowly and grow a little bit larger. Right?
Yeah.
So it does that over the full animation, and then you just copy that over and over and over again.
I love it.
So you have this like big swirling cloud, right? And then you take that big swirling cloud, and that big swirling cloud is lowered in opacity so you can see through it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then it starts a little bit smaller than it ends, and it moves to one side, and it gets a little bit bigger as you move. And then you have like little like stomping effects around the feet, and little glow effects for weapons fire that pop in and fade out. And then, you know what? Let's do a second smoke layer. Just layer that on top of everything. Oh, and then we have the foreground, which is moving in the opposite direction of the background. So you have this like, big whirling effect, right? Yeah. And then you have a shadow overlay that alters the color a little bit and gives everything that sort of like that cinematic lighting look. Oh, and then we just have like a virtual camera that is layered over this thing. Oh, also the virtual camera is moving a little bit. It's shaking with every step.
Yeah.
And by the way, just because we hate you, Flash, half of these assets are going to be actively blurred within the program. They're vector-based assets, meaning that they don't actually take too well to lighting and visual effects, so the program has to work twice as hard to get things to appear to be like blurred out and out of focus on top of everything else that it is trying to do, right?
Yep. So
this machine that I am running this animation on can run Crysis, right? So that's our benchmark, right? Like this thing is not a weak computer. I'm going to test the scene in Flash's native video player.
Yeah,
it's not even loading it.
Well,
this is supposed to be a real-time recreation.
Mm.
Of how this whole scene is supposed to be moving. This is supposed to be playing at 24 frames per second. And it is struggling to do maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah.
This one kind of crashed the computer a few times.
Oh boy.
Yeah. But once you have it down and once you have it like all rendered out, it looks so cool that it ultimately makes a lot of that work worth it, you know?
Yeah.
Very so hopefully cool. Hopefully we'll be able to
and then the sound, is the sound overlaid here, or is that done separately?
For the rest of that one, the sound is, for the rest of the film, the sound was overlaid separately. In this one, I specifically had to, can you hear the speakers coming on there?
I would turn them up loud because. Okay, try that.
We're probably going to have like weird feedback here. In this one we have the individual sound files layered inside. So you have like little foot stomps and weapons explosions going off. Yeah, there you go. I'm going to hit the play button in 3, 2, 1. So you have that, and then there's like 4 or 5, no, there's like 12 layers of interlocked sounds of every footstep, every laser blast, the PPCs going off, the autocannon going off. All of these are loaded into the actual like playtime environment here. And then that's part of the actual like audio and video file export for this thing. So that also eats up a whole bunch of your computer's innards as you try to test it. So yeah, it gets crazy really fast when you try to animate giant robots in Flash.
Awesome.
Oh, I'm so sorry, computer.
It all turned out in the end.
Yeah. That's the plan anyway. Awesome. That's the hope. Yeah. So that is sort of a breakdown of how to torture Flash into giving you giant robots.
Awesome.
So
in the sound and soundtrack, is that something that you had produced, or was that taken from any kind of open source? Like where is all this coming from?
The soundtrack is actually from the Nogigatsu Galaxy team had a sort of collection of just like orchestral album a few years ago. I'm not sure if it is still available now, but that was what I took the sound from. They said, hey, if you need like, here's some like audio files from MechWarrior Online to get all those like explosions and weapons effects, and here's a soundtrack to just slap into this thing.
Great. Awesome. that's a time saver.
Yeah. But of course now, because I'm just a madman or stupid or something, I just sit down and say, I just want to write my own scores for these things. I want to boop, boop, boop. And so that's been the thing that I've jumped into more and more over the last year or so. So I'm looking forward to making more giant robot stompy music.
Yeah, people go visit DC Bruins on YouTube for some samples of his learning process and the audio. That's very cool there. Well, yeah, let's let's dive into that movement pattern a little bit, you know. And so we chatted on a little bit while the video was playing, but just in kind of the thought process in terms of and how you're kind of animating that with the motion. Of the mechs, maybe we can geek out a little bit over kind of how do mechs move? How are they supposed to move?
Oh yeah, because I'm sure you, like me, like every BattleTech fan ever, has caught themselves just walking in a hallway when they think no one's looking and like holding your arms up and going, looking around like, yeah, I'm an Atlas, stomp it around, yeah. So a lot of those actually did come down to standing up and reenacting that motion.
Yeah.
And then going in and trying to feel out visually how all of those individual parts of the human body and therefore the mech body are like moving around. I do want to in the future really create a delineation between the motion and the personality, not only between each individual mech and pilot, but between the weight classes as well. Okay. So I want light mechs to be almost these barreling race cars or like more graceful than they should be, right? And on some points, like especially if you wanted to look at some of the light clan mechs, like the Dasher, the Fire Moth, the one that goes like 200 kph out of the box, like that thing, on top of just like moving blisteringly fast, I would like to, if possible, create a sort of like a difference in the visual styles of how they move between clan and Intersphere tech. I want Intersphere tech to feel like a little bit more solid and clunky and heavy. Mm-hmm. Almost like a little bit more humanoid. And then the clan mechs become a little bit more animalistic, a little bit more graceful, a little bit more predatory in the way that they move.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, which I had never thought about before, is in terms of bipedal motion, looking at kind of those fast birds, they're about kind of where you're tapping out for the kind of max speed for bipedal motion kind of in nature. And so beyond that, you're getting into the realm where you're creating it yourself. Like there's nothing on 2 feet that's going 100 kph, much less 200 kph.
Yeah.
And so that's, it's interesting. Cause I can imagine how four legs would do that. You can look at a cheetah and just kind of, expand on that, but by increasing the stride length. But yeah, that's interesting. That's something for me to chew on in my imagination.
Yeah, two little animation clips that I want to get to eventually is like a locust runs up to like a cliff or a gorge and without jump jets just like flings itself over this gap, and you see its little legs like, and it lands on the other side, so it's skidding around, almost falls over, continues on its way. The other one is just straight out a locust stomping on an elemental in the way that a secretary bird does with a cobra.
Okay. Just holding it down.
Yeah, awesome. It should be fun.
Well, I've seen the preview of your upcoming project, and I'll put a pitch out there, for everybody else. It's you can see the years of improvement and advancement there, but to kind of push you, if you put out little clips of that on your Patreon, I'm sure you'd get some good support there. Like,
yeah, that's a good idea.
Put out a 5-second clip every once in a while on Patreon, kind of a little update on that new one.
Yeah.
be sure. Good. You know, people sign up, support Daniel, help him pay the bills.
Yeah.
Help us all pay the bills in COVID times. But yeah, it looks like, cause you've got, it's like what, 30, 40 seconds worth of animation in there, or is that, no, that's even short. It's longer than that, isn't it?
Yeah. The entire film is going to be about 3 minutes long, and mm-hmm. I am on minute 2, and I'm sort of plinking away at it between, doing like, illustration commissions for folks, and studying, just drawing and anatomy, just like it's like a constantly sort of, you have to work in these things and improve the process. But I think we are, at least as far as just drawing the things out and blocking out all the motions, we're getting into the final stretch.
Yeah.
At the same time, that final stretch has a lot of stuff going on, so it might be a bit longer than the first two stretches. We'll see.
Well, definitely, Matt. Set up an exclusive Patreon, you know, or set up like a 5-second clip starting from the beginning. Just put out a little update, you know, every week or two, every month, and make it, you know, for patrons only. Get some people in there. You guys want to enjoy DC's work, you know, throw them enough money to buy a cup of coffee every month, you know, and, you know, kind of contribute to the artists out there. Very cool.
If we can get to the point where that covers just the Adobe subscription,
the software, yes,
yeah, like, you know, that would be great.
I bought my, when I was working in the nonprofit, yeah, I didn't need a whole lot of, you know, advanced Adobe to kind of make up little ads and marketing stuff for the newspaper. So I mean, I think I had like Creative Suite like 6 or something like that, you know, which was still on a CD. And then I'm like, oh, I can't find the CD, so I guess I gotta go get another one. And they're not even on CDs anymore. They make you subscribe.
Uh-huh.
It's some crazy amount a year. You know, it's such a scam. It's so horrible. But yeah, so even me, I, you know, had to kind of get Photoshop, you know, because my old Photoshop wasn't doing it anymore. And yeah, so like, you know, community, help us out. Help us pay for these Adobe subscriptions to get the software that we need to do this. It'd be helpful.
Give me aid in my torturing of Flash, which is now transformed into Adobe Animate. It's still Flash, and it's still going to be broken.
Cool. Well, yeah, get those clips on there. They're worth it. I've seen it. I've seen it, audience. It's very cool. Some very cool things that locusts do. You get to see elementals in their elements doing what elementals should, which don't actually get enough representation in the BattleTech universe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, you see a little like elemental climbing up the shin of the Black Knight of the art that they released last week, and that's about it. But
No, these elementals are scary.
Dynamic elemental. That was actually, you know, it's like, you know, as I was brainstorming, if I could have, if I could have Daniel animate a scene, the scene from Blaine Lee Pardo's short story in the Shrapnel, where the elementals basically come out of the forest that the Combine troops napalmed, because they thought napalm would do something, and guess what?
Shadows loom out of the fire. Oh, yes,
do
ooh.
It. All right, good.
Ooh, that sounds
all right,
great.
Get you inspired. Let's do it. they're actually like, they're sitting there kind of smoking their cigarettes, patting themselves on the back, and then some very angry elementals walk out of the forest and do bad things to them. I people keep telling me I have a good voice for radio and whatnot, so, and you know, you never recognize your own voices, I think, but I was like, oh well, people keep asking for audiobooks, maybe I'll like do a short story audiobook just for fun. And that's the story I'll do. I'll do Blaine Lee Pardo. So maybe, you know, if you're inspired, you can kind of make that little scene, get an illustration, and I'll do the little audiobook for it, and we'll put it out on the channel, and people can geek out over the.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Awesome, awesome. Collaboration in the works happening, people. Real cool. All right. Well, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's about covered all the bases.
It's a lot of stuff. That was very cool. I'll definitely, those little animated shorts that you took us through, those are going to be perfect for like short clips, which I've been needing to do for the site, to make just little shorter videos that aren't an hour long for people to watch. And so I'll pull those out from the main conversation here and put them up for people. I think, it'll be awesome.
Yeah, it should be fun.
But good. Excellent. Daniel, this has been a ton of fun as always. You know, I love seeing this behind the process. You know, I love watching your videos. You know, like, you know, I've watched Revival several times today to make sure I was fresh and ready to go. And each time you get to the Atlas and Direwolf, and you're like,
okay.
So it's going down now. Where's the bass on my laptop? Can I turn up the bass on my laptop? Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Thanks, community, for kind of supporting us both, you know, and, you know, kind of hop on, check out DC's channel at Sir Dub Dub on Instagram and DeviantArt and SoundCloud. I'll put all the links down below.
Yeah, there's a web of them.
You know, explore Daniel's work, explore what I'm doing here, and yeah, stay tuned for more awesome Renegade HPG, and we'll definitely find a way to get Daniel back on here. Maybe it'll involve some elementals walking out of a napalmed forest.
That sounds fantastic. Great. Excellent. Let's do it.
All right. We'll sign off on that. All right. Cool. Take it easy. Bye.
See you, folks.